different.
Completely different. Yeah, we didn't. I missed the Bounty Hunter screening.
Shame.
It's a shame.
Really, it's
yeah,
just,
it ended up right around 9%.
I missed it too.
Yeah.
Because I didn't go.
It ended up around 9% around Tomatoes, so.
Yeah.
Not too disappointing. All right, so let's get in with our first news story. So we know Pirates 4 is happening. They just set up offices in Hawaii, production offices, and one of our writers, Adam, got he took a picture of the black pearl.
Did he really?
Yeah, and because it's docked, I guess, right near his house. And yeah, he's from Hawaii, by the way, if you don't know, Adam Hardy.
Yep.
And so anyway, so we know Penelope Cruz. Is
Pete Cruz in the house?
Is in the film, but we didn't know what part she was going to play. And it was announced that she'll be playing Blackbeard's daughter, who is played
Ian McShane,
and slash Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp's love interest, which is, I mean, to be expected. And I cannot. I mean, it'll be nice to see if there's chemistry and how much chemistry there is between, you know, two volatile performers like them.
I mean, the last time we saw them together was Blow.
Oh my god, you know what? Oh my god, I totally forgot about that.
Turned out pretty good. I like that.
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, I think Blow gets a little bit too much credit because Ted Demi died, and I hate to say that, but I mean, but yeah, no, that's true. That was back when Penelope Cruz still couldn't really speak English that well, though, so I feel like her performance will be a little bit more improved.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Rush is coming back as Barb.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. And then another little interesting news story, New York Post had a report that for Pirates, they're gonna focus on they're only gonna allow natural-breasted women.
Thank God. It's a blow to liposuction, to prosthetics, to just
now
to silicone everywhere.
Well, this is the quote. Ready? In the last movie, this is a casting agent. In the last movie, there were enhanced breasts to give that 18th-century horse look, and men were pretty well padded too, and no one worried. But times are changing, and the audience can spot false breasts.
Wow.
Now, is that...
Now, here's the thing. Now, Rob Marshall, okay, he's given us 3 films, Chicago, Memoirs of a Geisha, and 9. One has been good. Okay, 9 is far and away his worst. So he's been getting worse, right? Now, here's my question. Rob, should you not be worrying more about more important things? No, I mean, and this is just what I'm saying. At World's End was no one's... Godfather was not a strong film in any really way. I mean, the special effects are great, and Dead Man's Chest, some would say was worse, some would say was better. Not much either way, right? So, Rob, to improve, to rejuvenate a series that is just literally green with money and not much else, do fake breasts matter is the question that I pose to you, the listener, slash you, the director, slash you, Jordan Ralph, and what is your answer?
It's, I mean, in Pirates, because they said they wanted to get away from the
look. Also, did you notice
the fake breasts? What I was going to say. In the previous one,
did you?
It didn't really pop out.
You know why? You know why? Because they're fucking fake breasts. That's why. And it's a Pirates movie.
Yeah.
And not a Pirates movie, but a Pirates movie.
But they're going to, the talent scouts are going to have jiggle your jugs contest, or test, and jogging.
Whoa.
To make sure, you know.
Jogging.
Yeah. And they said that, people like are these gonna be like Penelope Cruz's gang or whatever, the girls that are there, or you know, Fountain of Youth, that's a huge part of this movie. Is it gonna be like girls laying around Fountain of Youth, like kinda, you know,
like harem or something?
That's what someone said. I don't know.
Is that what the Fountain of Youth is like?
I don't know.
Is that how God made the Fountain of Youth?
It's gonna be different than the movie The Fountain.
Unfortunately, yes, I think it will be different than The Fountain.
But anyways, Pirates 4 shooting this summer, and it's gonna come out May 20th. So we'll keep you
next year?
Yeah, 2011.
I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, speaking of another 2011 movie that's coming out on July 1st, Transformers 3.
Now, I believe that for a second. I don't think they'd try that hard. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Now, we try to avoid Transformers talk as much as
But at the end possibly. Of the day, we are a film news website, yeah. So the news is the news is the news.
Yep, and now Michael Bay, hopefully he's recognized his failure in Revenge of the Fallen, and I would
imagine not.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine
because he made so much money. But yeah, okay,
but,
hopefully yes.
But he's been taking some steps to kind of improve, you know, the series. And he said that one of the things is not gonna be such a grand scale in terms
of robots, right?
But he is actually expanding the location. Well, no, location first. Shot like the Tokyo stuff that was shot in Pennsylvania, and like it wasn't even shot in Tokyo. You know,
I mean, it didn't look.
But in this movie, he's going to Los Angeles, Chicago, D.C., Florida, Texas, Africa, Moscow, and China.
Nice.
So
a lot of American stuff. That's nice. That's good. Hopefully, a lot of people get work because of that.
And he just added 3 actors to the cast. Are you ready?
Who are they, Jordan?
It's a little burn after reading reunion. John Malkovich.
Well, kind of.
Yeah. Kind of. And Frances McDormand.
Nice.
And then Ken Jeong.
Now,
they're going to play. Because someone, when this news came out, he didn't post who they're going to be, but then Deadline updated. And because someone thought it might be like Hugo Weaving style, like just voice actors and just kind of, you know, like.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But McDormand's going to play the National Intelligence Director. Essentially a big part, so kind of taking over Angelina Jolie's father. Remember.
Oh, John Voight.
Yeah. I mean, he's still in... he's probably a similar type of character.
I really hope his character's still in 3. Because
I love it.
Because...
That arc.
His arc is not complete. I want to know if he has 5 more lines or not.
And I hope... I mean, John Turturro, I need to see, like, another pair of boxers.
I need to see another jockstrap on his ass. I do. No, I mean, I really... I felt like that was... the comedic climax of second film, you know, because it was the screenplay was layered in such a way.
And then John Malkovich is kind of shafted. He's just playing Sam Witwicky's boss, his first boss out of college. It's weak. Like, come on.
Whatever.
But I can bet they're all just going to huddle up together and team up and fight some robots. I don't know.
Is it going to be money, good for them?
Is it going to be like the guy from The Office, Dwight, I feel like Ken Jeong is going to be like that, but maybe John Malkovich will have a bigger part.
Well, but it doesn't seem like it if he's playing, like, they say the first boss, which implies that he's going to get fired or, like, going to quit or going to get recruited by Optimus Prime to,
is he going to spend at work? Like, what's his job?
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that good actors can, in the case of Transformers, I don't know how much they can salvage. I mean, the film's not about actors, so it's not like... not a bad actor.
Well, we saw John Turturro kind of not be used.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Shia LaBeouf's not a bad performer. John Turturro's a very good actor. Yeah. You know, John Voight, even people like Tyrese and Josh Duhamel can perform. I mean, they've shown us in other movies. But it also shows that if you don't have an actor's director behind you or someone behind the camera... guiding you, and I mean, it makes logically, how are you going to successfully portray a role? I mean, especially when you're given no narrative support. To me, it's window dressing. I mean, I don't know how it's going to really factor in, but whatever. I mean,
Well, it comes out July 1st, so
it'll be something.
It can't be worse than Revenge of the Fallen. There's like.
Never say never.
I know.
Again.
I'll get proved wrong again.
In the words of the James Bond, the not James Bond film. Never say never again.
So next news story, more of a culmination of a couple of things. So,
Word.
Last week in Las Vegas, just missed by a week, was Show West.
I did, I missed by a week.
Now this is the net. LZ. This is the yearly, it's for theater exhibitors who, you know, kind of the studios come in, show like a demo reel, they're up, or they premiere new movies.
Right.
And
one of the many conventions that is slowly dying.
Yeah,
I would say. Or I mean, not dying, but turning a new leaf.
Yeah,
they're becoming more like technology expos, really, instead of what they used to be, which is almost like consumer.
Well, it's like kind of Comic-Con was like all for comics, and now it's kind of exactly. Broad. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even like Apple, their convention. I mean, now, you know what I mean? Everything, because you don't need a meet in one place for a weekend to, like, buy shit anymore.
That's true.
But still, though, it seems like Show West was able to kind of still up the ante.
So they had 2 massive premieres once early. So, first was Toy Story 3.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come out until June 18th, and as expected, the response was really great.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone said it was great. One cinema blend, Katie Rich, said she wasn't in love with it as much as everyone else. And
she's a bitch.
No. I know. Fuck her. Not for not liking Pixar.
She's a bitch.
But anyway.
No, I'm kidding.
It was interesting to see because you saw all the tweets come in like, oh my god, I cry, last
minute. Yeah,
no, and then it was one person that was like, it wasn't. So who knows? I mean, it's happened before where there's movies that are premiered, everyone has loved it, and then it turned out to be not so good.
Yeah, no. It's
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, everyone said, you know, it's the last 30 minutes are brilliant in the movie. So.
Oh, that's okay. And how do we know how long it is? 2 hours? Or?
Yeah, I would assume. Less, like all Pixar yeah, movies have been 90 minutes to like 1 hour.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a final cut or anything. They're still finishing it up. Mm-hmm. Lee, it's actually, if you guys don't follow Lee Unkrich on Twitter, he's a really good. Like he, unlike some directors, he is constantly updating like actual production process. And like right now, he's at Skywalker mm-hmm. Ranch for the next 6 weeks, finishing it up there.
Oh, that's what we're doing.
That's where they're finishing it up, just for like I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, so that was the that was one of the films they screened, and then Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time, which kind of mixed reaction. I mean, everyone said the cinematography and kind of the design was beautiful, but the characters and the story were kind of weak. Which we could, I mean, you could kind of tell in the trailers.
I mean, you could. And also, it seems like Mike Newell directs like that. Even yeah. I mean, in almost all of his movies, they're beautiful. I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, but I mean, yeah, he makes beautiful movies, but.
Well, these are the production designers.
They're kind of blank films, seems like. Kind of like Scott Hicks, you know, he's similar in that respect. So.
No, very true, yeah.
Yeah.
But that comes out of May, so I guess it's not the video adaptation to save all the, you know, everyone said like that's the one, but who knows?
I mean, you know, it's definitely the biggest one, you know, so.
True. And then another really cool presentation was the Warner Brothers, from what I've heard.
Inception.
And they showed Harry Potter 7, which, whatever, I'm just kind of waiting for that to end. I haven't really been, I mean, I think you feel the same way, right? The last couple of films haven't been.
Yeah, I mean, I never even, I feel bad, I never even finished the fifth one. And the sixth one I did see, mistakenly, I saw it, I went to a midnight showing, which is just, I mean, for someone who's not really into it, I shouldn't have gone. I just was going with a couple of friends, and it was ill-advised, but...
So that, and then there's footage from Inception, like we said, and they can kind of compare it to The Matrix,
which is nice,
awesome,
good to hear.
And he said Nolan said that he wanted to create an experience like when he was a child when he watched the James Bond movies and Raiders of the Lost Ark. He said it's very like expansive. He travels to a ton of different countries and like. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice. He's talked about kind of like all the secretive marketing going on. He said he wants to keep that up right until the end. So obviously there's going to be another trailer, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to show probably anything past like the first, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. Like,
that's nice. Yeah. I mean, The Dark Knight was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. The way they released that, so that's nice.
And, and Katie Rich again said on Cinema Blend, I'll just leave you guys with this. She said, the last minute I started scrawling notes about people flying down snowy mountains, and it was onto a scene of Joseph Gordon-Levitt floating in zero gravity and tying up a bunch of corpses. So it just sounds like there's so much like crazy stuff
so
going on.
So she didn't like it as much as everyone else.
No, she didn't say that. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's okay. Yeah, I'm really, really,
it just sounds like
really,
there's so much crazy stuff
really
going on.
Really excited about it.
Another scene, Leo in a car filled with water. Just the entire car. It's like, it's like, awesome. It's just insane. Anyways, and then another story that came out was Hangover 2. There was someone interviewed Todd Phillips, and he's going to start shooting. Originally, it was going to be kind of early fall shooting, but they still want to get it out by Memorial Day, no matter what, so up next year.
Right.
But he said he talked to James Cameron, and he wants to shoot it in 3D. So,
I don't understand.
I don't.
James Cameron's going to help him with it?
Everyone goes to James Cameron now. It's crazy. Like every.
It's funny, because I had a relationship problem a couple weeks ago. I got too drunk and I said something stupid to a girl and I called James and I asked him about it.
Yeah.
And he told me what to say and it worked.
Nice.
We're getting married in like 3 weeks. Yeah.
Well, most of the reports I've heard has been related to 3D, but that's awesome.
Oh, no, everything. Yeah, no, I mean, that's awesome. No, I mean, mostly 3D, but I mean, he knows his stuff. He has been married 5 times, so it's not like.
Yeah. That's true. But, so. But no, like people from Spider-Man, Mark Webb, like, he's helping them. Yeah. It's like, and it was during the presentation. Warner Brothers said all their tentpole films from now on are going to be in 3D.
Right.
So I mean, sometimes it's like Clash of the Titans, which is supposedly post converted. But hopefully they'll. I mean, now they have kind of time; they can shoot the rest.
Yes.
I mean, I think Harry.
Well, I would imagine if it's a tentpole film, they'd be willing to spend the money to shoot it in 3D.
But like Harry Potter, the first one was already shot, right? I mean, that's going to have to be post converted. They didn't shoot it with 3D cameras.
Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, at least the first part. But then after that, I think that's like kind of the last temple that. But they saw Legend of the Guardians, Zack Snyder's. I guess that 3D is beautiful, but it's animated.
No, Guardians of Gahol.
Yeah, well, they retitled it Legend of the Guardians.
Oh really?
Yeah,
I thought they renamed it Guardians of Gahol.
They it's called Legend of the Guardians something of Gahol now. At first, it was just Legend of the Guardians. Well, first it was Guardians of the Ghoul, and now it's Legend of the Guardians. And now,
at least it wasn't the Princess and the Frog, or Tangled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Tangled.
Or Rapunzel.
No.
Or Tangled.
But yeah, so they said they also said after they finish up with Harry Potter, they're going to focus on DC Comics as their kind of huge franchise. You know.
But what is next? What is left?
The Flash movie. The Green Lantern shooting. There's a few others. Superman Returns is
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel is being developed. They also announced Final Destination 5.
Oh, good.
And do you want to know what Alan Horn's quote was? Because we can't resist. Really? That was his quote.
So it was, because why the fuck not? Why not?
So Warner Brothers, I mean, at least they've been pumping out some solid films, so hopefully
they'll be trying. If any other studio said it, I would be like, come on, that studio.
Yeah, if any studio can give Chris Nolan $200 million to make a fucking awesome movie.
Hopefully
awesome movie.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
I agree.
Alright, so, let's move into reviews.
Let's move right in.
Now, this week, there was a short film from Sundance that got offered up, Spike Jones, I'm Here, which we had a review of. Kristen, our writer at Sundance, saw and reviewed. But now, it was sponsored by Absolute Vodka, and they offered it up on their site, but it kind of is a weird...
The movie is better than the vodka.
It is. Nice.
I'll say that.
Now, Dan, I haven't been able to watch it because there's
I finally got around to watching it.
What do you think?
Yeah, I have to say, it's funny, I was trying to kind of resist... I wanted to resist... I'm Here love, in all honesty, just because of where the Wild Things love and the whole thing and what have you and the whole indie whatever, which I'm very much a part of, but you know what I mean? I don't like, I just felt like I didn't want to be loving something just because everyone else loved it. Obviously, as critics, we always get that pressure, but I have to say that the movie's very, very good. It's a well-spent 30 minutes, the soundtrack, it's essentially one song, really, works wonders. The voice acting is brilliant. Andrew Garfield continues to prove that he's just going to be one of the next, like, big, just successful, you know, young actors, you know, in the vein of Heath Ledger, you know, Imaginarium style.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of, I hope we look back in 10 years and kind of look at that film as a passing of the torch in a lot of it. I mean, a sad passing of the torch, but nonetheless. Anyway, I mean, the direction's really calm. It's not as, I mean, in terms of shot selection, it's nowhere near as, it's nowhere near as interesting or ambitious as Where the Wild Things Are or any of his future films, but I think that's part of its charm. It's very much just about the characters.
Yeah, it doesn't stay
the setting is, by the way, just for people who don't know, it's about robots and humans. They live in the same world, like essentially just like ours, except robots are these human-sized people. Essentially, they look like humans with robot suits on and then animated faces, which is, I think, what they are. They do service tasks, essentially. So, like, the main guy, Sheldon, he is a librarian. And, you know, people pump gas, they're mechanics. Like, that's what robots do. And the humans, you know, reap some of the benefits. And reap the benefits. and so it's all about this loner robot who falls in love with another robot who's living her life a lot more fully, a lot more riskfully, and it takes a lot from The Giving Tree. There's a lot of, you know, some parts of it reminded me of the animated film More by Mark Osborne, which is a great, great, great film. You know, it takes from a lot, but at the same time, it's very original.
Mm.
Very much like Spike Jonze's movie. Great companion piece to his three features, yeah. And, three, right?
Adaptation, wait, no, four. Baby Don Malkovich, and Where the Wild Things
Are. Oh, no, three. Yeah, okay, I was right. And so this is just another great addition. So,
I mean, one question I had, because, like, looking at the trailer, that was, it kind of, like, does it go to places you don't expect? Because, like, I watched Logorama, the Oscar short, and, like, I was surprised, like, that it kind of, like, it opened up a lot to me. But, like,
I mean,
does it stay with the characters kind of the whole time?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very simple.
Mm.
Once it establishes itself, and once the first real conflict is solved the way it's solved, you kind of get what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the ending is... Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it takes you to places you don't expect, but I think what's nice about it is even though it doesn't take you to those places, it feels fresh anyway. You know, the way that a lot of indie films will do, where it might be something you've seen before, mm-hmm. but just the way that it's done is very, very much, you know, like a Anna Fleck, a Ryan Fleck, Anna Boden film or something mm-hmm. like Half Nelson or Sugar, where you've seen those stories told before, but never that way.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. This is a lot like that. So definitely we're seeing. You can YouTube it. I don't know for how much longer. I think it's probably
going to take off soon. I'm Here movie.
It is I'm On Here. It's really annoying, though. It's really so frustrating because they like do it for it. Yeah, it's stupid. But if YouTube it, well, you still have a chance, and then it's worth waiting, though, if you have to watch it on Absolute.
Nice. Yeah, it's really cool that they're doing this. Like, I wish they kind of did that. Because I remember...
I hope this is a sign for, you know...
Remember that? On the it was released on iTunes a couple years... It was either Sundance or Oscar shorts that were released on iTunes. Yeah. Remember that? I downloaded them all.
Yeah,
I forget which festival it was, but it's really cool that they're doing
that.
That was
a year ago.
So, definitely check that out. I will be doing that tonight.
Well, yeah, iTunes has been great about that. I mean, yeah. I downloaded Six Shooter, which is Martin McDonagh's Oscar winner movie, and I watched it, and it's great.
Nice.
That's 30 minutes. Yeah. So, I mean, definitely, I hope this just continues.
They're doing kind of like they did for Sundance, kind of you can watch the movies the day they premiere online if you want.
Right.
They're doing that for Cannes, too, a couple films.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, this year?
Yep.
Nice.
Nice. So.
Don't need to go this time.
Nice. So, nice. Let's get into our first feature film review.
Feature films.
So, let's talk Roman Polanski's The Ghostwriter first.
Roman Polanski.
Yeah. Now, this is coming Summit, Oscar-winning studio. Hurt Locker.
Oh, right. Oh, my God.
And Twilight Studio. It's so weird. They picked this up for U.S. distribution, and thankfully, it goes kind of wide, and I wasn't sure we were
going to... It's making money.
It's making money, too.
I mean, it costs a lot of money, $45 million, but, I mean, all that money is private French money. You know what I mean? I think, I think Summit is probably making pure profit on it, I would imagine, mm-hmm. because you pick up distribution rights for a movie like that. You know what I mean? I wonder. I can't imagine they spent a lot of money on it. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it's been doing well, and it's worth. Oh man, I think it's worth every penny.
Yeah, yeah. So this is from the Robert Harris novel,
The Ghost,
and The Ghost, and it's about Ewan McGregor in one of his best roles as of late. He plays a ghostwriter, and he's hired to complete the memoirs of Adam Lang, who is a former British Prime Minister, played by Pierce Brosnan.
Who is like a carbon copy of Tony Blair, in all ways.
In an amazing intro where they show, it starts out on a boat. Yeah, if you've ever taken your car on a boat and had to go, it starts out, they're taking all the cars off the boat, and one car's left, and it's kind of this like eerie, if someone tells you that happened, you have to see it in the movie. It's kind of like the way he films it is so well done.
Well, I mean, it's one of those simple things where you think about like Hitchcock films and, Alfred Hitchcock, he had a great way of taking normal life, taking just everyday events and finding the horror in them. Not the horror, but the suspense, the tense... In everyday events, and I feel like the opening of the movie does that perfectly, like you were talking about, because it's just a bunch of cars in a parking lot, and it's in the bottom of a ferry, and it's as simple as there just not being someone to take that car away, and where is that person, and that is in itself with a great score the movie has an incredible score. It just introduces that where is this guy, and then that ends up leading through the entire film of just what the hell is going on. I really think that is a great beginning to a great film. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. His direction is like just spot on. Like,
I don't know. I don't agree with people who are saying that it isn't like a Polanski film. People are saying that it's the a way standard he, thriller, the way and I don't understand that. Yeah,
the way he like creates the environment that he's like that their safe house or the house.
Yeah, the house in Martha's Vineyard. Yeah,
I just love the way and the town and there's a scene towards the end where he goes on this walk to try to discover something and he talks to the guy.
Olivia.
It's just the way it's filmed. It's all, like, dreary and, like...
Yeah.
And it's just...
Yeah, awesome. I mean, and the thing is, I was talking to... I saw with a friend, and I was talking to him about it, and we agreed that a lot of reviews have said that the film loses steam in the middle, and the mystery kind of just, I don't know, gets a little... I don't know, just wears off, essentially, and it just kind of limps to the end or something. And I don't even necessarily disagree with that, because definitely...
it's not a hard-boiled mystery film the way that The Maltese Falcon is, or the way that Chinatown is, or even like the way that the Year of the Dragon is, or something which is a lesser film, but it's not about the mystery, really. I mean, it is, but for some reason, it has to be the writing and Polanski's direction, and also the performances. It's so well made that you go along with it and love it anyway, or at least I did, because of the pedigree, you know, of the film. And I just, Pierce Brosnan gives an incredible supporting performance. Kim Cattrall does a good job. Olivia Williams.
Tom Wilkinson
has one great, great scene. Eli Wallach, he has a nice little moment. And then obviously Ewan McGregor, his best performance in years.
Yeah.
And I hope to God with this and I Love You, Philip Morris, that he's going to move out of this bullshit little thing he's been doing with like these movies. And not only the movies, but just the roles in the movies have been so just dank and like wasteful. Like for someone who came in so strong, you know, I mean, really, you know, Ewan McGregor had some great films in the beginning there. So, the lighting was great. I'm trying to think. I mean, I just...
We can go into spoilers. I don't know.
Yeah, we can go into spoilers if you want, just to talk about it a little bit more. Definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, doing the very end, the last shot is awesome. I don't think I'm
that far. Last shot. Oh.
Now, did you, like, there's a shot where he figures out that Adam Lane's wife is part of this conspiracy.
She is a conspiracy.
Yeah, and they pass a note along. Do you like that shot? I thought it was a little too much.
I liked the shot.
Yeah.
But it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's like this. Yeah, there's like this.
Because I guess
he didn't want to say it, but he wanted her to know. Like, you know, I mean, he didn't.
Well,
like,
I mean, so, like, it's funny. That's the only shot, and for me, in the entire film, that feels just self-indulgent.
Yeah, it's exactly
like,
the same
thing. And it's weird because usually, I don't know. Roman Polanski, and I haven't seen all of his films, but I've seen a significant amount of them, and even in his most artistic moments, you know, like you have, you know, the famous face blocked by the door shot in Rosemary's Baby, or, you know, there's several shots in Frantic, there's a rooftop scene in Frantic where, you know, the angles are so just, you know, canted and what have you, and like, you know, all these different things. And Polanski clearly takes a lot when he does the thrillers from Hitchcock. I mean, he takes a lot from Hitchcock, like we were talking about before. That was one of the only shots I can recall from any Polanski movie that I've seen where I really felt like, wow, this is just a great director who just didn't want to give up a shot.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like he actually... And it's funny because you would think a director like Polanski, who's been around, you know, for so long, would kind of be...
He would not. I mean, he would know. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, he would be.
Or maybe it's like the Martin Scorsese thing, where he's like, "Fuck it, I'll just."
Yeah, but like Scorsese. Yeah, but see, that's the thing.
Speaking of Scorsese, I know. I just want to interject. That's a good point. I read this article because we talked about him talking about suspense thrillers.
Right.
And a lot of people have actually compared this and said, if you were disappointed by Shutter Island, you might like this because it's more of like a mystery.
Classic.
Yeah.
More of a classic. And, it does stay a little bit more focused on that.
But
and you know, actually, quickly, before you think about it, I just want to get this in. The thing also about the Ghost Rider is it's really funny.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think people realize how funny it is.
Yeah.
And like, Hugh McGregor's funny and the writing's funny.
Because some people, they came out of, it was at Berlin or the film festival, and people said it was laughably bad. Some people like said that, but I didn't. I mean, maybe they
thought. Yeah, but it was. The thing that what I love about the Ewan McGregor character, who has no name, he's just the writer,
the ghost.
The ghost is he is in his own way. I would equate him to Elliot Gould's Philip Marlowe from Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye, which literally it's that film is a lot like The Ghost Rider in the fact that in some ways it subverts the hard-boiled detective genre by not mocking it, but by finding the comedy in it. You know, and in that movie, The Long Goodbye, which if you haven't seen, you see it as soon as possible. It is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant movie. Elliot Gould, who's a comedic actor, is funny. I mean, he's funny. He makes jokes about how ridiculous things are when they're happening, but still there's mystery and still there's ending, still there's a surprise and what have you, and there's bloodshed and all this. And this movie's a lot like that. I mean, Hugh McGregor, it gets to the point where everything's so ridiculous where he's just... He can't help but not make it. There's a scene where he makes a mistake sexually with someone, and if 30 minutes into the film, you'll know who he's going to make this mistake with. And I guess from spoilers, he's about to have sex with Olivia Williams, who's Pierce Brosnan's wife, and he goes into the bathroom and he looks in the mirror and says, "Bad idea," and it's hysterical. I laughed, you know, and then what does he do? He goes out and he has sex with her. And it's awesome.
And so when they got, I mean, I saw the critic screening, so it wasn't that packed. But one really funny scene was Kim Cattrall. Her there's a news story that comes out about Adam Lang, and Ewan McGregor is like talking about how are you gonna handle this, and she's like, we are the ghostwriter, you can write it up, or like, yeah. There's a lot of dialogue that's not just,
and just like there's so many funny lines about how he's implicated, where I mean you see in the trailer she goes you're part of the group now that makes you an accomplice, yeah. You know, yeah, like it's signs like that are. I guess if you were a really serious person and you want to take it really seriously, you could be like, wow, this is laughably bad. But I really believe,
yeah.
You know, and I've read parts of the Harris novel. I really believe that the comedic touch is intended.
Well, I mean, if you watch, I know because they're dated movies, but like Double Indemnity.
There's comedy all over that, of course.
And it's so dark.
I think that's one of the biggest problems with a lot of thrillers these days is they take themselves too seriously. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's entertainment.
Repo Man, like we're going to talk about later.
Right, exactly. And I think that's a big thing that hopefully people that are younger than fucking Roman Polanski, younger filmmakers will, write more funny, even if it's violent thrillers.
But
Scorsese.
We were talking about like the continuity stuff. Mm-hmm. So get this: the opening, the title credits. You know, mm-hmm. They were a second shorter than the average. That's like another thing that they use to throw people off. So like the credits in the beginning, like the overlay.
Yeah.
They were 2 seconds long instead of three, isn't it? And then there was.
Really?
Yeah, it's like crazy. And then the way the boat scene was filmed, I could tell, it was so, like, disjointed when I was watching that,
because
there's no back and forth, it's, like, full, the shot is, like, they're medium shots of their full bodies, and, like, they never cut back, and it's like, crazy, and then, a lot of the master shots of, like, when they show things, they're, like, cut off, like, there's a pan down shot of where Ben Kingsley lived, and they cut it off before it gets to the end, like, what you expect, and it's, like, this guy, like, analyzed all these scenes, I really want to rewatch it now, because, like,
I wanted to rewatch it since we saw it. Yeah,
it's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, but like,
fucking Scorsese, man.
I know. Obviously, Ghostwriter is not,
I guess you could call them both thrillers. I mean, they're very different films.
Very different. But Ghostwriter.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if you could find a theater within hours. Go see it. I loved it. Right now, it's my favorite movie of the year. I mean, I haven't seen How to Train Your Dragon yet, but I've seen Shutter Island. I've seen Greenberg, which we'll talk about next week. And this is just a little bit better than both of those. It's great.
I watched the movie, like, I really enjoyed it, and, like, when I left, I was like, that was good, you know, it was really good, but, like, I don't feel, I just, like, a solid
right.
movie.
I
don't know if I would necessarily, like, rewatch it or, like, even buy it, but,
right.
But, I mean, there's a couple other movies I like more, but this is definitely one of the best.
One of the most solid films of the year, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm glad to see Roman Polanski, because a lot of people were like, oh, is this just going to be, like, a hack kind of, because he had to edit it really quickly, remember that? But yeah, no, I just doing really well, like Dan said, at the box office. So
it's nice to see.
Just so well put together. So definitely check out the Ghost Rider. Now, the wide release of the weekend.
Yeah.
Repo Man. We'll always be Repo.
We'll always be Repo.
Now this is the directorial debut of
Jumpscare.
Subchik.
That is probably not how you say it.
And I'm sorry I butchered his name, but
Miguel Subchik.
Yeah. And
that is so wrong too, but anyway, it's his debut.
As the tagline so eloquently puts, for a price, any organ in your body can be replaced, but it also can be repossessed.
Yeah.
What's
the deal with these taglines lately? Is that not just a statement of a fact? Like, can you think of anything more creative, PR department?
Dude, that's what on Slash Film made a whole episode talking about taglines, you're listening to. Like the aliens tagline is so awesome, like in space no one can hear you scream. It's awesome. Like, there's just not, like, good taglines out nowadays.
I mean, in the thing, what's the tagline for The Thing? It's awesome.
Isn't it, man is the warmest place to hide?
Yes, it is, and it is even more awesome than I thought it was.
No, but,
seriously.
But, I know it is.
Shutter Island, some places never let you go. Horrible.
Yeah.
Go home.
I know there's some good ones, though, recently, but not as much as before. I agree.
I wish,
because I remember there's a couple.
The tagline for Repo Man should have been, a joke's a joke. Because they say it 9 times in the film. And at some point they actually say in voiceover narration, which is always solid in films, voiceover narration, to explain to the audience what they're seeing. Just in case the visuals aren't strong enough. Jude Law actually says, sometimes the job's just not a job. Which, the implication being that, like, sometimes when you repossess people's organs by cutting them open and taking their liver out and then leaving them to die, people get hurt.
Which, that's ridiculous. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Now, here's the thing, and this is Repo and Roger Ebert, in his review, he gave it 2 stars, which I feel like is more than appropriate. That is, like, the that's perfect rating for a film like this. Asked the question, is this meant to be a satire? Is this meant to be funny? Or is this meant to be taken seriously? Because the actors are taking it seriously. The score is half taking it seriously. But then there's the tango music, which is a reference to what the film was going to be called, which is Repossession Mambo. Yeah. Which, if it had been titled Repossession Mambo, I think the idea that it was a satire would be more kind of apt. But
that's true, yeah.
There are a lot of things.
Yeah. But anyway, this is kind of a fugitive on the run story. Jude Law.
The Hunter Becomes the Hunted.
Yes, exactly.
Minority Report, Blade Runner, Repo the Genetic Opera, Without Music. It's actually the exact same movie as Repo the Genetic Opera. Darren LeBosman was talking about that. And Darren, I'm sorry, wherever you are, because Universal probably owes you a copyright check.
Luckily
the film wasn't good. So,
but the first, like, I would say 30 minutes of the movie, 20 minutes?
Yeah, no, it starts, really that's solid. The thing, it does, that's probably what makes it even more disappointing, is that it really does start very nicely, the first, it actually immediately starts with a horrible fucking monologue about, like, a cat, and it's terrible. Yeah. And, like, Jude Law's character doesn't even understand it. He says that in the film, and I sympathize with this character, because I don't understand it. And then his explanation is like the kind of explanation that someone who didn't do the reading for an English class the night before would give in an English class.
Yep.
You know? He's like, that things live and they also die. And it's like, that's not an explanation. That's the cycle of life. Yep. Like, I could watch The Lion King and figure that out, and like it'd be a lot more elegant. but after that, though, impossibly, it regains your attention, and it's a very very exciting first 30 minutes. It is.
And then RZA shows up.
RZA,
and it doesn't... And then from that point on, kind of,
as soon as the second act begins, which is like when Jude Law gets in an accident via RZA. And you know what also annoyed me? From the trailer, what I was hoping for was that, like, the reason... For those of you who saw the trailer, he kills RZA. He goes to knock RZA out with, like, you know, the shock, the defibrillators. And he does it, and then shit explodes, and he ends up
back.
And at first, I thought it was because there was some awesome black market thing that RZA had inside of himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, that was going to be a whole new subplot about, like, this group of people who were, like, making, like, I don't know, Terminator Salvation style or something, like, making cool shit underground.
Now,
like,
did you...
And but it's... This other stupid subplot that is, like, the easiest thing that you could do, and it's, like, implausible. There's no, like, character motivation for it or anything. It's, like, so... And it's annoying.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, there's two avenues. Robert Frost style. And they take the path always travel. Yeah. And it's just very
And then sad, and when he gets hit back, he does this, you know, go. He goes flashbacks, kind of. I really kind of hated that because it's in a lot of other movies.
Oh, my fuck.
And when he recounts every time, all the times he's been knocked out, it's just kind of...
Well, it's like Snatch style. There's, like, freeze frames and shit. But here's the thing, though. Like, there are these... Like, that's a funny stylistic thing. Like, a freeze frame, and Jude Law's like, hey, I've been knocked out 4 times in my life, all this stuff. And, like, that's, like, you're laughing, or you're, I guess you're meant to laugh, because it's like...
You're smirking.
Oh, this is, like, you know, he's British, and it's like, this is, you know, it's like self-aware, breaking the fourth wall narration or something.
Yeah.
Omniscient narrator shit, which is, like, cool. I don't know. But then it never you know, it chooses its moments to be funny, and then the other 65-70% of the film is, like, dead serious.
Dude, there was a
song. Forrest Whitaker is, like, unwatchable. Like,
well, let's lay out, for people who haven't seen, do you want to lay out kind of basic story?
Yeah, you go.
All right. Jude Law, he's a repo man. Always will be. And
his job will always be his job.
And him and Forrest Whitaker, they grew up at, they were high school, Forrest Whitaker, he has been in school for longer than him. He had to repeat his fourth grade 3 times.
Mm, something.
And, there's kind of this flashback where he's beating him up, and then it flashes forward, and he's beating him up again, and they're partners now. And Liv Schreiber.
Liv.
He plays kind of like their boss, and he delivers these pink slips, I guess, pink what are they
called? Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like, it's like anything. It's, yeah, there's
so orders to do, to get, yeah, to repo orders, to repossess.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like repossessing a car, except what it is, I mean, it is, if you know anything about Repo, the genetic opera, it is the story. It's, there's a Repo Man, okay, Jude Law, he's got a friend, he goes to people who are 3 months and 6 days past their due.
Yeah.
All these credit plans are made because it's like a lot of money. It's like $700,000 for a liver or heart, you know, a lot of money. So people can never pay it, so the credit goes bad. And then he comes, he shoots them with like a dart gun, and then takes what is the union, his company's property, away, and then leaves them. And they, you know, and then obviously if it's something like liver or heart, you're going to die. And then, but that's what... I mean, you know,
and then, sign the contract. And the sci-fi world that he created. At first, it's kind of cool, but then it's kind of been done, like, in so many movies. Like, Dark City. Like, I mean, all these movies that... And right. Don't you think...
Well, I mean, and also...
Just kind of this dystopian...
And also, I mean, the world itself is never a real character.
Yeah, like, with Daybreakers, I kind of like that part of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
Daybreakers they do a lot of things. The character was the world. And yeah. Then, I mean, Dark City, literally...
Yeah.
The biggest character of Dark City, and I think the reason it's such a great film is the world. Like, what is the city?
Yeah,
you know, and then that is really the ultimate question. It's not really,
but they never show. There's kind of these Blade Runner type, like the sign, a lot of like signs
in this one, in Repo Man.
Yeah, but it's kind of everything just kind of feels copied.
It does.
But there's the storyline. They go kind of. I mean, as we can see towards the end, they kind of go to places that. It's kind of ambitious. But
there is a nice twist at the end. Yeah. I will say that, but it's. It's a little, there, it's cheap, a little rough. Too, though. It's a little cheap, too. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that they really... I think they cheat a little bit, you know, because there's some things that happen where if you had to go back and explain them, that you kind, it kind of doesn't make sense, which maybe we can get into in a second, but
yep.
But I mean...
But no, but so...
Just to kind of get through, Liev Schreiber steals every scene. He's a great slimy boss, you know. He's kind of doing Sabretooth without the claws.
No, how did it work so well in this movie, but not really? I don't think Wolverine is that.
Oh, see, I liked him as Sabretooth. Yeah. And Wolverine. Right. Yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, okay, but I mean, understandably, but I thought he was great in this one.
Yeah.
Forest Whitaker, just like, I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. He had a thing that he was doing or something. He's kind of like an idiot in the movie, yeah. Like a bully, but like.
He tried.
But also just not, I don't know, it was bad. It was just a miscalculation. And I do think he's a great performer, I do. Yeah. But a miscalculation.
He does, like, there's, like, a little thing he adds to each scene, and it kind of just kind
he
of
has ridiculous. This, like, muttering thing, the stumbling thing, a lot of, like, which he does well. I mean, that's kind of always been part of his performance. But not, I don't know, it just doesn't work. It's, like, off. Maybe it's because he's next to Jude Law, who's just, like, got a very natural presence, you know, and it always, Forest Whitaker's a good actor, but he always is acting.
Yeah, acting.
And Jude Law, it always seems like... He's not acting, he's just kind of being himself, which, I mean, you can make whatever judgments you want to make out of that, but Jude Law is great in this movie, actually. I think he does the best with what he has. Alice Braga, beautiful, still hasn't really proven herself to be the niece of Sonia Braga, but I mean, hopefully in time she will be as elegant and memorable as her.
And her kid, but her character is so poorly developed. It's like, they go to this bar, and he sees her once, and then he, like, falls in love with her. And then his wife is pissed off. Well, I mean, we'll get into spoilers. Well, I mean,
the worst part of the film is the wife character.
Yeah. Jude Law is married. And
Jude Law is married.
I did like the son kind of relationship a little bit.
Yeah.
But not, I mean, that even wasn't ridiculous.
I mean, it's... I mean, the wife character, she doesn't want him to do Rib anymore because he's killing people, so that makes sense. But it's to the point where... The thing is, and this is nothing about the world, it never establishes... Like, it establishes how people feel about Repo, like the people who are going to get repossessed obviously hate Repo Men,
yeah.
Obviously. But it doesn't ever establish how the society feels about Repo. There's one nice moment... Yeah. Where there's like an SNL show on and they're making fun of the idea of Repo Men. And so, thank you for that little taste of what could have been really great. Yeah. Like, show me an editorial of someone reading an editorial about Repo. You know, the mortality of it, the morality of it. Like, what does it mean to be a Repo Man? Is it acceptable in our society? Blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
Like Daybreakers. And that's why a movie like Daybreakers works a lot better than Repo Men, even though they're made for the exact same amount of money. The exact same, like, talented cast and all this.
Yeah. I mean, and the only thing, every time they show one of those graphic, extremely graphic
scenes, yeah, this is a very violent film.
You're just kind of like, oh, that's really violent, and they do it very well. Like, it's gross. Like, they succeed, totally, but, like, gross, yeah. There's no, like, I don't know, I just didn't feel anything about any, you know, about, yeah. There's no...
I mean, it's not far off from watching Saw.
No, it really
two.
Isn't.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's violence for violence's sake, you know, and it's funny, in those moments of violence, it feels the least satirical, which is kind of ironic. You would think, yeah, that if it were satire, which I honestly,
well, there was, I mean,
I honestly do not believe it was. I mean, there's one scene where the violence is supposed to be kind of funny, but like it's so gruesome, and not Sweeney Todd gruesome, where it's like the blood's like spraying everywhere and it's like bright red. It's like gruesome, like the best blood I've ever seen, and you literally feel the slices. I mean, which I guess. Way to go, makeup, you know, special effects department. Yeah. But, like, man, is it unwarranted. And, like, I mean, it's one of those movies I think we shrugged after we saw it, and that was probably the worst thing that a movie like that can do for you.
Yeah, I mean, let's get in spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers.
I would say, I mean, just before, if you haven't seen this, which not a lot of people did see this weekend, but I feel like this is a movie that a lot of people have already said this, but there are people going to kind of discover on DVD, and if it's your type of thing, like... You know, yeah. I wouldn't recommend seeing it in theaters, and if it doesn't really interest you at all, then don't. I mean, it's not a movie you have to go see.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people love movies that have twists, like, even if the movie itself is not good, you know? I always find that funny. Like, there's a lot of crappy movies out there where people are like, oh, man.
Well, it's a thing. I mean, yeah. It's like a...
And, I mean, this is one of those movies, and we'll talk about the twists right now, if you want. But, Dan, what do you think? Don't meet your people. See it?
Well, so he's a fugitive. He gets in this accident. He gets an artificial heart inside of him.
Massive spoilers.
Jude Law. And he can't pay it because once he himself is someone who has an artificial organ, he realizes really what he's done to all these people, which in itself was a ridiculous thing, because would you really need someone to put an artificial organ in you to realize that you were killing people? Like, that was another thing that I really couldn't get behind, but whatever. And so because of this, he can't perform anymore as a repo man, and he goes on the run with Alice Braga, whose entire body is essentially artificial organs off the black market, except for a heart, and they're on the run, fugitives, blah, blah, this and that. And at the end, they, like every movie, go back to where it started, headquarters, to
the top floor,
literally beat the system,
yeah.
And this like gruesome scene, they have to scan, in order to get out of the system, they have to scan their artificial organs, so they cut into each other and scan each other's organs like inside of themselves, and it is like one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen ever. And the music is Sunshine ripoff-esque,
yeah,
which I guess puts a lot of artificial, ironically, emotion into the moment, which for that moment does, I guess, work. But then now, 2 days later, talking about it, you just kind of shrug it.
But then at the very end, at the end,
and Forest Whitaker comes in with Liev Schreiber. Forest Whitaker is chasing his best friend at this point, and then randomly he turns coats, kills Liev Schreiber, happy ending. They're on the beach in some tropical island, and then there's a flicker, and all of a sudden you realize that Jude Law actually died,
like,
30 minutes before ago. When he fought Forest Whitaker for the first time, and they put him in this dream state, Vanilla Sky style.
Which they hinted at a few
times. They hint out for a second. For a minute, they, like, talk about it. Which, I guess, it's like one of those stupid exposition things, the way, like, they make fun of it, and Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, yeah. You know, like, oh, where do you think the climax is going to be? Like, the nuclear power plant? And so, it's kind of like that, and that's it. So he's dead at the end, and Alice Braga's gonna die, probably, and Forest Whitaker's still bad.
Well, is that the system he hooked up to? I had a question. Is that, because that's not for people, I mean, does he die, or is he just, like, in a
coma? Well, I guess he's not dead.
Because someone's like, oh, the leave is open for a sequel now, which I hopefully they do not make, but...
Well,
I know, I'm just saying.
Two repo, two furious.
I know. So he's in this.
Yeah, okay, so if he's not dead, he's comatose. He's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's living in a dream world, Tom Cruise style. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And, and like, you know, like we said, ambitious ending, it doesn't earn, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, yeah, I agree with you about that name, but I mean, leading up to that, there's a scene which we can talk about, like, kind of, have you seen Old Boy?
You've seen this.
And no, it's not one long take, like,
Old Boy. Well done, though. I mean, in its own right, this scene is well done. And, the action in this film is, I think, pretty well done.
Yeah, he's on the top floor about to go into this room that Dan talked about. Him and Alice Braga, yeah. And there's, you know, what, 20 guys in his way?
1,000 agents, yes.
Yeah, and he just kind of, he uses a hacksaw very creatively.
Yeah.
And,
he's got these knives. And it's awesome. I mean, I did actually really enjoy watching it. That's where violence, I guess, as entertainment worked. I mean, it's choreographed nicely. Jude Law definitely plays the part of an action star well, better than I thought he would. He has always done comedy well, and so he does comedy well in this movie. Unfortunately, the director, the writers, Forest Whitaker, are all not up to the challenge.
Yeah.
And that's a shame for people like Law, Schreiber, and Elsa Braga.
Yeah, I mean, I would say do, like I said before, you know, just, if this really interests you, just, I would say wait for DVD. There's no reason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you really are sci-fi inclined, you know, see this, if you've seen, you know, the sparse amount of sci-fi that is actually really good.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the middle is just too
boring. I feel like this movie and Pandorum are in that same, you know, that same package deal, essentially, you know, like films that just don't take that next step. Yeah. You know, so, and yeah, it is what it is. I mean, you know, it's swing and a miss.
Yep.
Swing and a miss.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all Repo, man.
That's all Repo. All
right. So, you want to, let's talk about next week's releases.
Let's do it.
I've seen them all. And you've seen two-thirds, right?
No, yeah.
Have you seen? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
All right. So, Hot Tub Time Machine and How to Train Your Dragon, releases.
Yeah, yeah.
Both very good movies.
Yeah.
And very enjoyable, at least. I mean, Hot Tub Time Machine.
Toad to a Goat. Yeah.
And then Greenberg, limited release.
Which actually was released. Wasn't it released this
Three
week?
Theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but this is the wider.
Wider release. And it's actually coming to Buffalo. So, all you Buffalonians, I would recommend all of these movies.
Triple feature. Yeah. I'd recommend one of his, well, two of his films.
No. All three. Hot Tub Time Machine, Greenberg.
Oh, I'm sorry. Getting released. Sorry. Today. They're all strong films coming out.
I feel like How to Train Your Dragon might, do you think it'll overtake Alice? I don't know how it's working with the 3D theaters, box office wise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, Alice is dropping normal. I mean, it's not.
Not Avatar stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, it didn't drop 18% last week or something. So I think that probably by next week people will have had their fill, I guess. I don't know.
And, well, I mean, people are predicting Hot Tub Time Machine might, like, follow the Hangover route with massive success.
Yeah, it's not tracking that well, though.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess if people love it, which, they might.
But, yeah, we'll be back next week with reviews of all of those.
And quick news, which you just read.
Oh, yes.
Here, and you probably have read this on our site before you listened to this anyway, but just in case you did not. It is confirmed, it has been confirmed by more than one source that Chris Evans is Captain America.
Nice choice.
And it is about motherfucking time.
I'm just so glad they got anyone. It could have been anyone. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I still would have liked to see Mike Vogel, but I guess Chris Evans is like Mike Vogel 2.0. Yeah. So, I just kind of...
I mean, ever since I saw him in Sunshine, I was like, this guy, you know.
Evans. Ever since I saw him in Not Another Teen Movie.
That's true. That's
years ago. That's literally years ago. How old is Chris Evans? He's old. He's like 32, I think.
He's
been around. My man's been around.
I mean, Captain America is supposed to be in, like, an older...
Yeah, but I mean...
But he doesn't look old, so...
It's an origin story, so you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's officially Captain
America.
Nine
movies.
They're shooting soon, and Joe Johnston has his Captain America
pop. And the second actor to be playing two superheroes.
Yes.
Him and the Wrens.
Yep.
Him and Ryan Reynolds.
Yep, Deadpool and...
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, that's right. Alright, well, you can follow all the news updates on the film stage, and you know our Twitters by now. You can tweet us all day.
Tweet us, tweet me
and,
every day.
Follow us on Facebook, and send an invite to your friends, because we just hit 1,100 fans.
Hell yeah, keep it coming, keep those fans coming.
And if you have any questions, just email us, because we would love to, you know, do a little Q&A at the end of the
podcast. Yeah, any topics to discuss.
Yeah, so you can email us at editors@thefilmstage.com. Alright guys, thank you. But you know it's not the same.